The last day of our retreat seems to have come by quite quickly. And we'll be looking at sky, but also, I guess, connecting with some of the other material from the retreat. And we'll be doing some meditation. And at the end of the session, we'll also, lots of people were asking questions about whether or not we're going to do another retreat. And so I'll be talking a little bit about that at the end of the session. But anyway, let's just arrive for a minute and connect with the earth and our bodies, heart. In the sky. So it feels like there's an inner earth, heart and sky, and there's an external earth, heart and sky that we've been connecting with on this retreat. And there's so much one could explore around any of those separately or collectively. So this has just been a, in a way, dipping our fingers, our toes into it. So I had so many things I was thinking, oh, it'd be good to talk about this, good to talk about that. And I suppose where I've ended up is with some questions, actually. So yesterday, Paramananda asked us during his talk to think about, why am I here? Why has reality chosen to manifest in me? So I don't know about you, but for me, those feel like very big questions. Ongoingly, questions to revisit. And there was another question that came up in the question of and answers around what are we trying to do, that has also sort of stayed with me a bit overnight. And the other thing that was really staying with me from Paramananda's talk yesterday was the whole idea of us having a calling. Even from when we're children, there's something that we're aware of that maybe we're moving towards. Maybe we feel it more clearly as children. And in a way, not being too literal with it. So like him saying that he'd had this calling to be a painter. And although he's not literally painting, it feels like he's followed his calling. So I was reflecting a bit on what were the things that I wanted to be when I was younger and through my life, where I felt the calling. So actually the first thing that I really wanted to be when I was a child was a dog. And I think actually, if I think about a dog sort of and the qualities of a dog, I think that's all in line with my journey of my spiritual path, actually, because there's something about dogs that is very, they're very grounded, they're very loving. They're very accepting, very loyal. There's something very open, you know. They're interested in everything and everyone, well, usually. They connect with the earth, you know. Dogs love being out, don't they? Running around in woods or on the beach or wherever it is. But wherever they are, they're interested. There's a Denise Levertov poem that Paramananda sometimes reads in his meditation sessions that I've always loved, and I can't remember it exactly, but there's something about the dog, how the dog goes intently haphazard, and also it's very engaged in its imagination and perception through sniffing around the rock and the mud, and also that there's nothing the dog disdains on his way. So from that point of view, I think, yes, the dog would be a good inspiration and could still be an inspiration for me, even though I did soon get disillusioned and realised it wasn't actually possible for me to become a dog. But I could maybe cultivate dog-like qualities, you know, find a dog inspiring in the same way, I guess, that we do that with the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Maybe as a child, there was some part of me responding to the qualities of dogs. There's something about paths and journeys that were mulling around in my mind, and also something around insight. There were a lot of questions around insight in the question and answers, and about so-called insight practices, a system of practice. And this is a meditation retreat, and I guess it's interesting because I think the practices that we've been doing have been very much around insight, and the way we've been approaching it has been very much around insight. But I also know that I used to think very much of insight in terms of seeing something clearly, breaking through something, going beyond self in a much more rational way. And I think the more I practice, the more I realise it's not like that, and you can't do that. Sangha Ratchet actually talked about how we can't go along the path without bringing in all the unconscious, all the irrational parts of ourselves. He talks about that our spiritual development needs to be directed towards the growth of the whole psyche, not just part of it. He says we need to unify our energies and enlisting the cooperation of our unconscious energies by means of myth and symbol and the exercise of imagination. And he says very clearly that the rational approach will not do it on its own. There's a few places where he talks along the same lines, very much about being receptive to archetype and symbol, listening to them, allowing them to speak in their own way to us, and especially our unconscious depths. So we're not just mentally engaging with them, but we're experiencing them and assimilating them and allowing them to transform us. But, you know, very much a sense of engaging our hearts, engaging our whole person, whole everything about us in that path. Maybe I will quote. He does say, in order to appeal to the whole person, it isn't enough to appeal just to the conscious, rational intelligence that floats upon the surface. We have to appeal to something more. And this means we have to speak an entirely different language from the language of concepts and abstract thought. We have to speak the language of images. If we want to reach this non-rational part of the human psyche, we have to use the language of poetry, of myth, and of legend. So we are trying to bring in, you know, that whole language of poetry, symbol on this retreat. That's one of the things we have been trying to do, even just with the title of the retreat, of Earth, Heart, Sky. But I think that doesn't mean to say that we don't also include our rational mind and our thinking mind in our practice, in our lives. And I suppose, I'm quite interested in how we have so many dualities that aren't really dualities, but we kind of experience them as dualities and probably work with them and live as if they are. And a lot of the path is about coming to a place when we realize they're not necessarily. So in the same way that yesterday Paramananda was talking about, you know, you can't have earth without the sky or sky without the earth. You know, I think in the same way you can't have samsara without nirvana or nirvana without samsara. And so many things that we're working with, we have to work with both aspects. So yeah, how do we bring those things together? Well, I think it is interesting how sometimes the more we go into our own experience in depth, the more personal we get, the more intimate we get with ourselves, the more we can connect with something universal. Again, in that description we had symbolically, we can understand the heart as containing both what is most intimate and most universal within us. And I do think there is something very much about if we do truly allow ourselves to discover who we are, be with who we are, all the intimacy, and actually be honest and open to the whole range of our experience, then we do connect with what is universal. It's the same way that when you have a really good writer or artist or actor, in a way, they're using their experience to catch a truth that may not be literally true. They may be making something up, but there's a deeper level of truth that they're connecting to than other people can connect to, even if they have very, very different lifestyles and experiences. There's something about the human condition that can be understood through time, through all kinds of things, if somebody's actually being true and honest, in a way connecting with reality, I guess. So when I started practicing and when I started being a bit more open to the Dharma and wanting to practice as a Buddhist, I know that the whole idea of enlightenment just felt like too much. I didn't even want to go there. And it felt like it was totally unattainable, so why even bother to think about it? And I'd just get on with practicing as best I could and working with whatever it was I was working with. And, you know, maybe in a few lifetimes, if I believed in rebirth, then that would be the time to be thinking about enlightenment and trying to develop insight. And I think it's a shame when we do that, because I do think that awareness, insight, awakening is actually accessible to all of us. And it's much more approachable, much more something that can be part of our everyday mundane lives, as well as on a more, I don't know, the language is always difficult, isn't it? Transcendental level or something. I think Paramananda said something about reality wanting to manifest in the material. And I think for me, reality with a big R, wanting to manifest in the material. And in the immaterial, we have all those different levels, don't we, of form and formlessness. So I'm sort of thinking my way through all of this, and it's not. I suppose there's a level where we can engage with reality in the material, in the mundane, in our actual experience, which I think is part of the practice, part of opening out into a much deeper level of awareness of reality, and therefore is an insight practice and can be part of any meditation practice, can be part of our lives and our ethical practice and everything that we do, if we choose to look at it in that kind of a way. Often you get this phrase around reality as seeing things as they really are. And if we can see things as they really are on any level, I think that's part of aligning ourselves with reality, part of insight practice. You know, so whether that's seeing your own experience, whether it's how you see the world, whether it's being emotionally honest, whether it's acknowledging all those bits of yourself that you really wish you didn't have or that don't actually fit with your self-view, but actually being able to be honest and sort of see, well, this is what's here. All that is part of aligning ourselves with reality, part of cultivating more insight and awareness. And it's interesting if we go on to the sort of archetypal level of the Buddhas, and particularly the five jhanas and their wisdoms. You have the wisdom of equality from Ratnasambhava that sees the sameness of everything and everyone. And you also have Amitabha's discriminating wisdom that sees the uniqueness of everything and everyone. And I think the two are not separate, they're just other sides of the same coin. But it can be helpful sometimes for us to focus on seeing the uniqueness, seeing the individuality of ourselves and others in the world, and at times also to let go of all of that and just see the common things, what we share, the equality. So it almost feels like the way to get that we need to start in a way in the mud, like the lotus, you know, however messy we are, to be able to own all of that, whatever our conditioning, whatever our views. And in a way, we're working with whatever conditions we ended up with, you know, where we were born, you know, the families we grew up in, where we were educated, all the experiences that we've had ever since then. That's our working ground. Again, St. Gretch has talked about where we are is less important than whether we know where we are. And that the possibility of freedom arises out of knowing oneself and knowing, you know, the possibility of change and going beyond our present condition. There's an interesting, it's a short talk, so it's worth a look, that he does called Path as Symbol. And I think that's helpful because he's, you know, often we do present the spiritual journey as a path or a journey, and the Dharma is often presented in that way. So it's good to remember that the image of a path, the image of journey, is just a symbol that represents that we can change and we can develop, we can grow. And yes, one of the things I like about that particular talk is St. Gretchen talks about how we develop the path. It's not out there. We are the path. There's a nice quote in it about if we think of it as something out there, like a road or track, we may get stuck with an unhelpful notion of the spiritual discipline required in order to follow it. One is not following the Buddhist path if one feels that one is being driven along it like a sheep, rather wishing one could stray off and have a nibble on some succulent wayside shrub or flower. Well, certainly I think my path is very much about straying off, nibbling on all kinds of things, getting lost, trying to find my way back. And often when one does that, you end up somewhere we weren't expecting, and maybe getting insights and learning and developing in ways you couldn't have anticipated. Certainly if I look in terms of, we talk about positive conditions and negative conditions, and I think about things that were difficult in my life, think of all the ways that I've made mistakes and things that, well, on one level could have been seen as disasters, and in some ways they were, but also that they often learned to a lot of growth and development and insight. And it's hard to really say that they were negative conditions if that's what they gave rise to. So I think, you know, it's very much a journey where we're developing in our own way, trying to create conditions for growth, development, to cultivate more awareness. And again, sometimes that can be conscious, sometimes we can put some effort into that, but there's another way that if we do that, we will be trapped on a sort of more superficial level if there's no time when we kind of let go of that and we are just going beyond that sort of rational mind and allowing ourselves to respond with all the other sides of ourselves. So particularly the body and the heart, we've talked about them having their own awareness, their own wisdom. And I think we need to bring all three into play, really, allow all of those to be an important part of our practice. So why are we here? Why am I here? Some ways I don't know, and why has reality chosen to manifest in me again? I don't know. But now that I'm here, what am I going to do? I guess is the question. And I've always been someone that has actually followed my heart in terms of what I've done. Well, almost always. So, well, I didn't become a dog. I did have a desire to be a writer at a certain point, but then I discovered music, and then I decided I wanted to be a professional musician, and ideally in a string quartet, which I was for a while, and then for many, many years I was working as a classical musician. And I think that was following part of my desire to connect with beauty. And yes, the language of music that does go beyond thoughts and concepts. And sometimes listening to music or playing music, I would have experiences of different levels of reality, something more spiritual, sense of interconnectedness, sense of truth, honesty. Hard to put all into words, but certainly for me, it was kind of the precursor of the sort of spiritual experiences that I had later when I was practicing and when I was meditating. I think you can get into dhyanic experiences in all kinds of contexts, not just meditating. And for me, that was definitely one place where I experienced them without even knowing that's what they were. And it did change me. It did make me... I suppose more sensitive. It did make me have longings and aspirations for something beyond my current situation, even if I didn't know what that was. And the sense that I could be more than I was again, even though there was a part of me that was very fixed and thought I was a certain way, and that way wasn't good enough, and it was never going to change. Yeah, and along the way, I've done quite a few things. I trained as a counsellor and therapist and worked at that as well. I did massage and healing work. And again, it was all very much about feeling partly a desire to do something to connect with others and myself, to be more real with myself. So I think even though I wasn't aware of it, doing all the body work, I needed to do that myself to connect with my body more, to free my energy, to have more subtlety of awareness of energy and things like that. And I needed to sort of release a whole lot of stuff that maybe was held in the body at that point. But it was also a way of connecting with others, a way of connecting with myself, and a way of expressing metta and mindfulness. I remember at one point I just read all about Sukhavati and the Pure Land, and you know, like getting enlightened through smell and things like that. And I was thinking, well, what would it be like if you can communicate the Dharma through touch? You know, and you can certainly kindness and mindfulness, you know, through touch, you can help other people to access that themselves. I think there's a part of me that was wanting to create more positive conditions for myself and others, if I look at it from my perspective now, responding to my own wounds and other wounds and wanting to create conditions where maybe healing might be possible. But also I think one of the things that's really interesting when you're doing any kind of counselling or therapy is that there is that opportunity to look at your conditioning and to look at the sort of views you have about yourself and others in the world that you've probably never questioned or might not have questioned before then. I suppose that's what I also like about writing and art and theatre and things like that, because they often create that possibility of looking at things in different ways, seeing things in different way, getting a bigger view than what might be one's normal experience. And why am I saying all of this? Well, I suppose it's kind of like following a direction, even if you don't know what the direction is, just trusting your heart, your instinct sometimes, rather than just always playing safe and staying with the familiar. You know, so at certain points in my life, I felt, yes, but there was something more, and then I went to something else, and I went to something else. And I think for me, one of the great things about the Dharma is I feel that everything's there. You know, I don't need to look further than that, and there's so much opportunity with any bit of the Dharma to go really deeply and something about having a dharmic perspective that does actually, for me, work. I can apply it to anything, any situation in my life, anything that I'm experiencing, anything I see out there, and it still holds true. And I think along the way, I've been interested in all different kinds of models, whether they were therapeutic models or whether they were psychological models or whether how we learn, those sorts of models. And, you know, a lot of them have had a lot of things that have been very interesting and helpful as a way of viewing things. And I think, one of the things that was being talked about yesterday in the Q&A was talking about the system of practice as a model for our practice and meditation. And I think models are really helpful. They give you a framework. You can look at it as long as you don't get rigid around them, as long as there's sort of some creativity around them. But I suppose for me, the Dharma isn't a model. The Dharma is just a truth that just holds true in any situation. And that is such a gift. In terms of what might we be trying to do in our meditation? Um, Well, I suppose from a Buddhist point of view, there's two main things we're trying to do, isn't it? Because we have our shamatha practice and our vipassana practice. So we're trying to cultivate that emotional positivity and calm and establish ourselves and integration. And then we're also trying to gain awareness and insight into reality. And and for me, they're always present in any practice, but I'm not always consciously trying to do that. And I think, again, there's that whole thing about effort and it being appropriate. And sometimes at certain stages in our practice, it might be helpful to have more discipline, have more effort, have more consciously trying to cultivate and develop things, as long as we don't get goal-orientated or do it in a fixed way or just stick with the habit, because that's what we've always done. And there's a place where we need to just let go of making all the effort and just be open and receptive. And often then we can drop a lot deeper. But for me, I needed to have done the other stuff first, and I still need to sometimes move between the two. So, yeah. And it's and it is interesting, because if we just go with trying to follow our intuition, you say we're trusting our intuition, we can't always know whether we're following our intuition or we're following our preferences. So I think it is always good to sometimes have that check to that by looking at what we're doing, considering what we're doing, questioning what we're doing. And at the same time, we need to not just be thinking and questioning, and we do need to have that surrender to let go, to trust the body, trust the heart, trust our mind in the biggest sense of the mind. So not just our rational cognitive mind, but that big mind. Yeah, there's a whole area of thinking about ego in our practice, and whether or not we're trying to let go of the ego or go beyond the ego. And I suppose in some ways we are, but we do have an ego. Certainly I experience myself as a self with an ego. And it's been an important part of my practice, getting that self to a state where it actually wasn't so damaged and had a sense of confidence and had a sense of self before I can start that whole process of trying to loosen that up or soften that up or, you know, go beyond it in certain ways. And I think the thing is that for me, there's the big mind and the small mind. And I think we all have that experience of when our experience is quite small, quite contracted, very much concerned with ourselves or our little circle. And that's very much, I think, coming from a place of protection, protecting ourselves, protecting our loved ones. And underlying that, there's probably like fear. There's probably some kind of ill will and aversion, others that we're seeing as outside of us that may be threats to us. And what underlies all of that in a way is the delusions and of not seeing our interconnectedness and seeing ourselves as being this sort of very fixed separate self, and thinking that we can fix samsara or we can create the situations we want. All the things that underlie the sort of cravings that we have and trying to make things the way we want them to be, even though we know on another level that's not going to be possible. So I think the ego does defend itself in lots of ways, and particularly in meditation, actually. So I think it's not unusual that whenever we have a breakthrough, whenever we do maybe have a little bit of experience or glimpse of a different level of reality and go beyond our present experience, that we can often respond to that with a sense of fear or shutting down or avoiding, like you make a breakthrough in your meditation and you don't meditate for a while or something like that. I think that's quite a common experience. So I think there does need to be that kindness, that metta, that compassion towards ourselves when we're practicing. And also just that willingness to be more open and receptive. And it's trying to deal with those kinds of contradictions, and how we view things in a way is as much keeping us deluded as anything else. I just wanted to do another short reading from Sogyal Rinpoche, because I read from him this morning. Think of a wave in the sea. Seen in one way, it seems to have a distinct entity, an end and a beginning, a birth and a death. Seen in another way, the wave itself doesn't really exist, but it's just the behaviour of water, empty of any separate entity, but full of water. So when you really think about the wave, you come to realise that it is something made temporarily possible by wind and water, and is dependent on a set of constantly changing conditions. You also realize that every wave is related to every other wave. So, I'm going to end in a moment. And I know I've been talking about a lot of different things, but for me, there's something about just getting back to the simplicity of sitting, being with your experience, being with what's happening now, being open, receptive. And something about letting go as we do that. And opening as we do that. And I'm just going to leave you with a line from a T.S. Eliot poem, which I've had in my brain this morning. And I think, in a way, encapsulates a little bit what I'm trying to say, where he talks about a state of complete simplicity, costing no less than everything. A state of complete simplicity, costing no less than everything. Okay, so I'm going to end there. So maybe we could just have a few minutes, leg stretch or whatever else you need, and then we'll do some meditation. So I'll be leading us in a meta practice, but maybe with a little bit of a more receptive approach. And I think often we can find the first stage quite hard. If we think of it as a stage of befriending ourselves, maybe just bringing a little bit more kindness to ourselves. And if it's hard to do that for ourselves, maybe it's helpful to remember, as Paramananda suggested, that the earth loves you deeply as part of itself. So just allow yourself to be loved by the earth. Or if you find your imagination connects more with Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, maybe thinking about Amitabha, infinite light, infinite love and compassion. He sees the uniqueness of everything, including you, with all your strengths and weaknesses, everything you've ever done. He still loves you. He said he looks on everyone with the eyes of a lover. So allowing yourself to feel Amitabha's love, if that's helpful. So just taking a moment to feel that connection with the earth. Whatever posture you're in, noticing which parts of your body are in contact with the earth. And knowing that your whole body is held and supported by the earth. Remembering that the earth loves you as part of itself. Your body is earth too. So connecting with our body, coming home to the body. Coming home to your body. And if you notice there's any pain or discomfort, any tension, just bringing some kindness, sense of care. And opening to the sensations of your breathing. Breathing body. And the breath that connects us to the world. And all the others who are living on this planet right now. Breathing in, breathing out, just like you. And just taking some time to listen to your body. So noticing sensations. So many sensations in the body. What does the breath tell you, the way you're breathing? Just opening to experience right now, whatever it is. Flow of sensations coming and going. A sense of your overall mood, energy. Noticing any emotions. You can often experience layers of feelings and emotions at the same time. So if there's one emotion you're more aware of, just notice what else is there. If you look below, getting a sense of your mental state. Busy your mind is, the quality of your thoughts. Just trying to be open, allowing whatever is there to be there. Not trying to force yourself to be other than how you are right now. Whatever's happening is whatever's happening. So don't judge it, don't push it away, just be with it, be with yourself. Interested. Can you give yourself some time to listen to yourself, to see yourself, just to be? The intimacy of your own mind and your practice. Coming intimate with all the things that make you you right now. Just bringing to mind a friend. Doesn't matter which friend. Just allow whoever comes up first in your mind. Without second guessing it. And just notice your response when you bring this friend to mind. So noticing the response in your body. Notice any change in your breathing. So not what you expect to experience, but what are you actually experiencing when you bring your friend to mind? Any tension somewhere in your body, or maybe a softening, an opening. Any tension around the heart area. A sense of warmth or connection, heart opening, heart closing. Tenderness. Also noticing if there's a change to your mood, your energy. Your emotional, mental state when you bring your friend to mind. Maybe you're not quite an image of the friend, but just a sense of them, sense of their presence. Maybe you find memories of time with them coming to mind. Just being open to whatever's there. Helps you have a sense of connection. You can just sit, just be breathing in, breathing out. Not trying to do anything. If there's any pleasant emotions, feelings, sensations, just stay with them, take them in. Let your heart dwell there for a moment. Maybe you're aware of things that you value, appreciate in your friend. Maybe there's a sense of gratitude having them in your life. So if that's there, just take that in. We're not trying to force anything, change anything. Other than bring awareness to our friend, our connection with them. And a sense of care, concern for their well-being. So now bringing to mind someone that you've seen at some point, maybe interacted with, but who's not important to you, don't have strong feelings towards them, one way or another, not part of your life. Again, just notice your response in your body. You've chosen them because they're someone you don't have strong feelings towards. But are there any feelings there? Any emotions? And you don't know them well enough to know the details of their lives. You find yourself having views, opinions. Assumptions. Is it possible still be aware of a connection, a fellow human being, a sense of solidarity? So many things we share in common with others. These bodies of flesh and bone, with all their frailty. We all experience suffering and joy. We all want to be happy. Find meaning fulfillment in our lives. We all have our wounds. So knowing that, can you have a sense of care? Can you be concerned for their well-being? Wish them well. Think of them with kindness. And now thinking of someone, there may be some feelings of aversion or will. Maybe those words don't connect. There's probably someone you don't particularly want to spend time with. Maybe we find them boring or irritating. Maybe they don't seem our kind of person. Maybe there's someone we feel critical of and blame. Maybe we or someone else we've seen has been hurt by them. I'm just judging who is appropriate to include in your practice right now. You have the capacity, the resilience to include someone you have stronger feelings towards. Or might it be better just to choose someone where the feelings are less strong and it's less invested? Doesn't matter. It's not the person, it's just your mental inner version of the person. Again, noticing your response, particularly in the body, when you bring this person to mind. So is there more tension in your body? If so, where? Just paying attention, allowing yourself to experience that. And then maybe breathing into that area. Noticing if there's a softening. Noticing your mood. Your emotional state. Your mental state. Thinking of this person stirs up difficult emotions, difficult thoughts. You find yourself getting into an argument in your head. Blaming them, justifying yourself. Just noticing, just allowing, whatever's happening is whatever's happening. Just bringing awareness to it. And kindness. So kindness to your experience. Whatever that may be. Trying not to judge yourself or them, but also being honest, being real, as anger or hatred there, then that's what's there. Just looking at it, seeing it, being with it. Seeing things as they really are in your experience right now. Noticing if there's some reactiveness there. Something about this person pushes your buttons. So looking at your own experience. Owning your own experience and feelings. And see if you can see the person as a whole person, not just in relation to you, not just in terms of the things they may have done or not done, things you like or don't like. Knowing they're imperfect just like you. And they too have the capacity to change and grow and heal, to be more than they are right now. There's a reason that they too manifested in this reality, in this form. Again, just being aware of them as a fellow human being. Being aware of both the things we share, the things that are unique and different. Only seeing if we can try to have a little more empathy. Is it possible to feel care and concern for them? Wishing them well. Just taking a moment to reconnect to pay attention to yourself, your body, your heart, your mind. And seeing if you bring to mind all the people you've included in the meditation right now. Is it possible to feel But aware of connection, interconnection. What would it be like if we were able to care equally, a concern for everyone's well-being, not just our own and those we care about? What would the world be like if we could all do that? In your own way, just broadening out your awareness to include more people. Maybe starting with people you've known. That will include friends and family, colleagues and neighbours, strangers. Some you like, some you don't like. Some you love, some you feel indifferent to. We're all sharing the same planet. We're all creatures of the earth, and the earth loves us all. Can we connect to the heart of the world? And all those living on this planet, living on the earth. Can we allow our hearts to do what they do best? Make those connections to open. To love. All around the world, in all different kinds of places. People, animals, all kinds of living beings. Trying to survive, live their lives right now. Think of all those all around the world. In all kinds of conditions. The intention, aspiration, care, connection, May all beings be well. May all beings be happy. May all beings be free of suffering. May all beings find peace and joy. Om Amideva Hri. 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 So we are drawing to the end of this session. And it feels every moment we're drawing closer to the end of the retreat. So for me, I've been getting a lot out of this retreat. I feel it's been a great opportunity to practice with everybody. And I think certainly for me, I felt that I managed to go to some depth in my own practice and felt quite inspired by things people have shared. And it was very much a little bit of a shot in the dark. You know, I thought, let's do a retreat online, having got no idea what a retreat online would be or how it would work or if we could make it work. Partly coming from the desire of wanting to offer something out there other than the normal classes that we've been doing. Partly wondering if there was an opportunity to create conditions where people could go deeper. And, I don't know what everybody else's experience is by me, but I've been pleasantly surprised in terms of my own experience that it is possible to have a retreat on Zoom, which I would never have thought in the past. So this has been part of a vision, really, of how we can still remain a Buddhist center when our Buddhist center is closed and we're not able to meet as a Sangha in person. And yeah, I think when it closed, I had this whole concern about A, how we could keep the Sangha together, whether we could still keep on communicating the Dharma, and also major concern about how we would survive financially. I think I'm in a very different place with all of those now. And I just want to thank everybody who's come here and who's made this retreat, at least from my point of view, a really rewarding experience. And I'd also like to thank everybody who has already been generous and given us dana towards the retreat. So we're hoping that we can do more retreats. We can continue to do a lot more online. We've only just started, in a way, exploring what's possible. And I think looking at how things are, it does seem likely that we are going to have a lot of our efforts online, and even when we open the centre, that we will continue to do that. So I'd just like to, I guess, make an appeal that if you have valued this retreat, if you have got stuff out of it, and if you are in a position to be able to give, then please do, because the centre needs it. You know, we've lost so much of our income through being closed, and, you know, it is still, you know, we're reliant basically on any money we get through donations or standing orders or from any of our online events. That's basically our only income now. So if you are able to and would like to, you know, we're giving the Dharma because we want to give the Dharma. We want to have this sense of practice and connection and Sangha. And if you're not able to give, that's totally fine. But if you are able to, then you could be supporting the centre and supporting our future events. And that would be great. I think Pranyanita will put some details in the chat about connection where you can give on our website and details if you want to make a direct payment. And we've asked actually if you can put the reference Earth Heart Sky, just to make it easier for us to know that that's why are you giving this donation if you are going to donate? So I also, it's not the end of the retreat yet, but people have been asking a bit about what we're doing in the future. So it's not confirmed yet, but Paramanda and I are hoping that we will do another retreat in July, towards the end of July. Provisional dates we have, but it's not for sure, around the 19th to 25th of July. But what we are definitely going to have is a weekend retreat, which Ratnadeva and Pranyanita will be leading, 3rd to the 5th of July, which I think is on the theme of Shraddha. Did you want to say anything about that, Pranyanita?
I think all I can say is we've been exploring knowing our minds lately in Wednesday webinars. And the retreat is going to be trusting our minds. And when we say minds, we kind of mean the heart mind. So the whole retreat is getting connected and continuing with your connection from this retreat of the earth, heart and sky.
And hearing you say that, I mean, I've been thinking all the time about chitta and heart and mind, and I never actually said that explicitly. So. Anyway, so there's that. And also I just wanted to say that, you know, we do have ongoing stuff happening, so if you want to know what we're doing, the best way is to sign up to our weekly newsletter. But things you might be particularly interested in is that we have Paramandala every Thursday night has meditation space, which I'm usually the Zoom host for, and that's Thursday 7 till 8:30. And he's also every Sunday he's doing a meditation club from 10:30 to 1. And then we have other things that you might be interested in as well. Sangha night, I'll be there on Tuesday doing something around the lines of transforming craving and letting go of control, inspired by Amitabha actually, and developing faith and receptivity to beauty and inspiration and things. At least that's the plan. But we have some great people lined up for Sangha night. So we've got Kamala Sheila, we've got Singha Shri, Vajradhaka, some other regular with us. Paramananda hopefully will come again. So yeah, do pop by. Is there anything you wanted to say, Paramananda? No, okay, he's shaking his head, so I think no. Okay. And actually, yes, if you're interested in a little bit more creativity and imagination and visual imagination, at the end of June, which is, I think, some Saturday the 27th, we've got Amita Jyoti. So you may or may not know Amita Jyoti is a really great artist, but she also does a lot of teaching art and mindfulness. I know she does a lot for City Lit, but for lots of other places. And you may have seen some of her beautiful paintings within the movement. I particularly love her blue Tara, and then there's the painting she recently did of the Buddha with Ananda. Anyway, she's going to be doing a 3-hour workshop on drawing and the art of mindfulness, which is open for people at all levels, she says. So keep an eye on that if that's something that interests you. Anyway, stop plugging now. I just wanted to respond to some people who were asking about what else we did. So we've got another 5 minutes before this session is over. And I really don't know what to do, except actually, I've just wanted to say the blessings verses actually to all of you. So here goes. May all blessings be yours. May all gods protect you. By the power of all the Buddhas, may all happiness be yours. May all blessings be yours. May all gods protect you. By the power of all the Dharmas, May all happiness be yours. May all blessings be yours. May all gods protect you. By the power of all the Sangha, may all happiness be yours. So hope to see those of you who can manage to come for our final session at 4 o'clock. And just to say, we won't be doing questions and answers, but we will still be doing meditation, and there will be some groups and other things that may emerge. And we will be ending with transferring our merits, because I think we have probably accrued quite a lot of merit between us during this retreat. So as many of you can be there, the great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bodhilela.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.